The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Harvey Brownstone Interviews is brought to you by the Harvey Brownstone Talk Show Blend Coffee, available at hollywoodblends.com. Everyone's saying it's the best coffee they've ever tasted. Why not give it a try and see for yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Harvey Brownstone, and today's guest is a highly popular and beloved singer-songwriter who became a worldwide sensation at the age of 10 years old when she dazzled television audiences in 2010 with her beautiful, angelic voice on season 5 of America's Got Talent. Since then, she's had a phenomenal multi-gold and platinum career with 9 studio albums, 8 of which went to number one, 3 number one live albums and DVDs, 30 top 20 singles, 3 highly acclaimed PBS concert specials, and 3 EPs, including her latest EP just released, entitled Sola. She's performed with some of the biggest names in music, including David Foster, Placido Domingo, Tony Bennett, Barbara Streisand, Jose Carreras, Andrea Bocelli, and many more. She has had many firsts in her spectacular career. She was the youngest top 10 debut artist in U.S. history, as well as being the youngest top 5 debut artist in the history of the U.K. And she holds the record for being the youngest platinum-selling solo recording artist in history. Her albums have been on the Billboard charts for a cumulative total of well over 500 weeks. She's performed at the top concert venues in the world, and she's also the youngest person ever to give a solo concert at Lincoln Center in New York City. And now, at the age of 24, our guest has moved well beyond her life as a child prodigy and has evolved into a mature singer-songwriter expressing her unique brand of creativity and artistry by telling her truth musically, both recently by collaborating with Smash Mouth's founding member and principal songwriter Greg Camp, who produced her most recent EP, Sola. Throughout her career, music critics from around the world have been falling over themselves searching for the appropriate superlatives to describe our guest's amazing voice, using words like magical, miraculous, flawless, celestial, superhuman, angelic. But I think Gia Tolentino of the New Yorker magazine said it best when she described our guest's voice as supernaturally blissful. And I couldn't agree more. I'm delighted to welcome the superstar herself, Jackie Evancho, to our show. Jackie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. That was an introduction.
You deserve it, my dear. I read that you first realized you could sing well when you saw the movie musical Phantom of the Opera and realized you could sing those Andrew Lloyd Webber songs. Is that right?
Kind of. That's when I realized that I love singing. It took me a long time to realize that I was good at it. And it's funny because I was doing concerts and I was, you know, touring all over the place after America's Got Talent. And, you know, I'm still kind of like, this is weird. I wonder why people want to see me sing. And then it wasn't until I moved to New York that I really realized that, you know, I'm kind of good at what I do.
Well, you actually came to the attention of superstar music producer David Foster even before you auditioned for America's Got Talent. How did he find out about you?
Well, we actually found out about him first. My mom, she was, you know, hunting all over the place, all across the East Coast to try to find opportunities for me, per my request. And she found his Hitman tour, and it was a competition he was doing. And, you know, we tried to be a part of it. And of course, yet again, I didn't win. But as I said in the past, not winning seems to work out for me. So
that's for sure. That's for sure. But when you hear someone, even as a child, when you heard someone like David Foster speaking the way he did about your voice, didn't that sink in that you realized you were really very special?
Honestly, no, because in my mind, it was just somebody being extra nice to me. You know, like no one's going to say to your face, you're not good. So it just didn't click for me for some reason. It does now.
Except that in show business, people are told all the time that they're no good. You know that.
That's very true. That's very true. I've had it.
Well, a lot of people may not know that you actually auditioned for America's Got Talent twice before they accepted you as a contestant in 2010. What in the world took them so long to figure out how well you could sing?
I don't know. I guess that it just wasn't my time. Because I had gone to them in person twice. Once I went fully dressed up in my princess ball gowns and my, you know, costume jewelry. And the second one I showed up in just my school clothes, basically. And, you know, it didn't stick. But the YouTube competition is really what kind of captured their attention. I don't know if it was because I was in front of an audience of a nursing home. I used to do that a lot. I would tour nursing homes and sing for them. But hey, I'm not complaining.
No, that audition was something that I don't think I'll ever forget. And it's still one of the most viewed auditions on YouTube. Now, of course, we all remember only too clearly the night of the finale of America's Got Talent. You sang Time to Say Goodbye with the fabulous Sarah Brightman, which was unforgettable. Were you aware of how shocked and upset the whole world was when you didn't win and you ended up in second place? Did you get it?
No, I guess whenever it happened, it was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, and I assumed that everybody else kind of felt the same way. And, you know, I was 10 years old, so I'm not really surfing the web, seeing what people are saying. But especially because I was so fond of Michael Grimm, who won that season. And he was such a sweetheart, and I thought he was so talented that it made sense to me. And I think it still does. But yeah, again, it's just everything was happening how it was supposed to happen. And I couldn't complain. I had an amazing experience.
Well, it didn't make sense to me, my dear Jackie, and I don't think he's gone on to have the career you had, so I beg to differ. Now, in 2019, you returned to AGT to compete in a show called The Champions, and again, we were all shocked by the outcome. In all honesty, and I'm saying this to you as a fan, given your status as a superstar at that point in your life and career, do you think you really needed to be a contestant again in a singing competition?
Probably not, but it was something I really wanted to do because, you know, the nostalgia when it was presented to me started to kick in and it was like, how full circle would this be? This would be so fun. And I was even documenting the whole scenario as I was going through it. You know, I'd wake up and I'd say, hey guys, it's the first day of my part two of America's Got Talent. And then I didn't get very far on it. So that was like, oh, well.
Well, I think the issue really was that when they showed those clips of you singing as a child, that's what everybody wanted to hear again. And mm-hmm. I think it's been a major challenge for those of us who've loved you since you were 10 years old. You're not that child anymore. You're not singing in that same style anymore. You've evolved, you've matured. And I think that it did you a disservice simply because you sing differently now and you need to be seen differently now. Does that make sense?
Oh, it does, of course. But at the time, I was still singing classical. My voice had matured in a big way. Actually, I think it was that performance that I found a spot that made me feel like Barbara Streisand when I sang, because even the mid to higher range felt powerful to me and I gained this crazy control over it. But I was still singing classical. Like I was singing Music of the Night and Somewhere. I just think that they were surprised because my voice had matured.
Well, it's matured beautifully. Now, a few years ago, you competed on season 3 of The Masked Singer as Kitty. Did you have fun doing that?
Oh, yeah, I had a lot of fun. It was such a ride for me because, not only am I singing in this bizarre mask and I'm anonymous, but I got the chance to explore a whole different side of my voice. And at the time, I was kind of a vet of being a performer. And so that was just a bizarre thing to discover a whole new side of me. That, and I mean, there were highs and lows. I was sick with the flu twice during that, run. And I was singing a Celine Dion song immediately after I was performing it live. My stomach just squeezed and did not let go. And I had a stomach bug and the flu again, and it was awful. But, those are the stories that I get excited to tell whenever I'm older and, their experiences.
Well, we sure couldn't tell in the audience. I love how you say I was kind of a vet. Jackie, at 10 years old, you became a global superstar. I remember seeing you on Jay Leno a week after the AGT finale, and then on Oprah's show, The Today Show, The View, The Tonight Show, The Talk, even Dr. Phil and The Martha Stewart Show. I watched them all. You were everywhere. And I couldn't get over how poised and calm and in control you were. How did you cope with the intensity of that level of fame?
I still don't know, honestly. I think I didn't allow myself to really feel it as I was going through it. It was just one thing after another, survival mode, get through it. And when I would have a moment to rest at home with my siblings and my pets and friends, I do remember I would start crying whenever I had to leave again. Not because I didn't, love what I do, but because it was like, okay, I'm gonna have to go at a million miles a minute again. But I really, as a kid, just wanna like rough house with my siblings, But it wasn't something super serious. It was just, I guess, growing up and gaining work ethic.
Well, did you ever feel like you missed out on a normal childhood?
Yeah, I do. And it's hard for me to say or admit, especially publicly, because I know how hard my parents tried to, do the impossible and build a balance with that. It's not really something that you can do when you're a child performer.
Well, not at your level, no. We had former child star Billy Mumy on the show. He said that sometimes he felt like he disappointed the public by growing up and that people would like him to have remained a child forever. And I know Shirley Temple used to say that all the time. Did you ever feel that way?
Absolutely. I still feel that way, especially because I'm entering this new phase of my career and I'm accepting my adult self. I hadn't done that until I think COVID and a little bit after that. And it was whenever I decided to do this career change and embrace my older self that I really accepted that I am different and I'm older. But there is this crazy pressure. You feel that you've worked so hard throughout your childhood and sacrificed so much, and people fell in love with that. And if you lose that, you lose all that you worked for. That was my fear.
I don't think you ever lost it. I think you simply evolved. And those of us who've loved you, not only for the voice, but the young lady that you are, have been so proud to see that evolution. I think you've lost nothing, you've gained. Now, you've recorded many duets with some of the biggest superstars, including Streisand, with whom you recorded the song Somewhere from West Side Story. Were the two of you together in the studio when you recorded that song?
No, we were not together in the studio, but David Foster was really close with her, of course. And, he'd ask permission from her to use her vocals and, show them mine. She approved of me, which first, that's amazing. And then, we recorded, I recorded in his studio in Malibu, and then he showed her. And the fact that she had approved it and was totally fine with putting it out there, and she's a perfectionist, it blew my mind because I'd been listening to Barbra Streisand since I started singing and even before. I was always singing Secondhand Rose and, all those songs when I was little just because they were fun. And so for her to accept me was surreal.
It's very validating. And you've recorded with and performed on stage several times with Tony Bennett. What was that like?
That was wonderful. He was so great at putting me at ease. I knew he was a big deal. I grew up listening to him for as long as I can remember. We were big Tony Bennett fans, and I knew that when I was going to meet him, this is somebody that's like, this is a big deal and somebody I admire. And right off the bat, he was so down to earth. He had his puppy with him, so I was playing with his puppy, and then we did rehearsal, and he was so complimentary and so kind, so kind. And for years later, I would get Christmas cards from him, and it was just like this super humble, beautiful person.
He was really kind to you, but I've heard you say in interviews that there were people when you were a child in the business who were not kind to you, and that's always upset me terribly.
I mean, you're always going to have people who love you and people who don't love you. And it's one of the harsh realities of life that everybody ends up learning. But one thing that I was taught at a young age is not to care. I was so grateful that my mother instilled that in me so young. So whenever stuff like that happened, unless it was to my face, because I have this thing where I start crying at conflict. Unless it was to my face, it didn't bother me.
Well, I don't know how anybody could be mean to you or abusive or exploitative. Is there anyone you haven't yet sung a duet with that you would like to sing with?
Oh, there are so many, but one that really sticks out to me right now is Brandon Flowers, who's the lead singer of The Killers, because my dad and I have so many beautiful memories of him driving me to kindergarten, and we're listening to the Killers tracks, and me and my siblings playing it and using stools in my dad's drum kits and pretending that we're in the band and singing along with them. So I would love to sing with him. Frankie Valli would be cool too, but I know that that's a different thing.
Yeah, I'd like to hear you sing with John Legend and
Oh,
Michael
that'd be
Bublé and oh, there's such a long list. Now,
yep.
in 2022, you released a fabulous album of Joni Mitchell songs called Carousel of Time, which I absolutely love. Anybody watching this show, if you don't have that album, go and buy it now. What inspired you to record that album, Jackie?
I was at a point in my career fresh out of COVID. COVID was rough for me. And I had a decision to either sign with my new label, who I'm with now, or go on my own path and, start embarking on the journey of releasing my own music, which I'm now doing. But when I listened to Joni Mitchell's material and, relate it to my own life, where I was at a point where I wanted to become a female songwriter and tell my truths, it just kind of hit home for me, and I really, really wanted to, I guess, put her songs out there, but with my own twist to them. And I'd hoped that I'd done them justice in her eyes. It was just, there was this big moment of inspiration and admiration, and I was like, I have to do it.
Well, it's a gorgeous album. I'm so glad you did. And I'm really enjoying your journey as a songwriter. 2017, you began to record your own songs, songs that you've written. In fact, your brand new EP entitled Sola contains six songs that you wrote. Tell me what drives your creativity as a songwriter.
Honestly, I don't even know. It's like a spiritual out-of-body force, because sometimes these songs, they just overcome me and it's like pouring out of me. I mean, Smoking Gun on the EP, that song was written in an hour and the rest was just building a track. And like these are just things that I guess my mind is begging to talk about, and the only way I can is through music. I will say that there's something instilled in me from being a child star and doing interviews since the age of 10, where I'm very careful with what I reveal to the world and what I don't. I think maybe the reason why critiques and all of that didn't hit so hard for me is because I was like, that's not all of me that they're seeing, so I'm not feeling so attacked. Yeah, there was a lot of that stuff.
Well, in recent years, you've definitely moved away from singing classical music and opera. I think that was a very brave thing to do, Jackie, because you have effectively changed your personal brand and become a pop singer. How have your fans reacted to that evolution?
I have had so much support, which surprised me. I was expecting the worst. But of course, you're going to have some of the people who are like, this isn't who I fell in love with. So I'm going to, peacefully part ways with my fandom with you. But then I have all of these people who are like, this is amazing. I am so glad that you're embracing this form of you. And then we have the newcomers who are like, your songs speak to me. And it's the reason why I do what I do. It really warmed my heart. So I'm really, really grateful for the diehard fans and the new fans, and even the old fans who ended up parting ways with me because they stuck with me for that long.
Well, I think your demographic, your target audience has really evolved. I mean, look at me. I'm in my 60s. I fell in love with you because you were the little girl I always wished I had as a daughter. And I was so proud of you. I remember going to see you in Toronto at Roy Thomson Hall. I'll never forget. I think it was the last song. Your dress lit up.
Oh, that was a magic trick with the lighting, but it was so cool when they started doing that in the concert. I loved it.
Yeah, I loved it too. And I was looking around in the at the audience in that concert, and I realized there was a real mix. There were a bunch of kids who really just idolized you because you were their peer. And then there were the parents. And then there were the people in my age group who loved the kind of music you sang because it was so classic. They were timeless songs. And now with your new albums, I'm finding that you're getting a lot more younger audience. Maybe they weren't even old enough to really appreciate you when you were a child. And then you're getting all the people who are the parents of the kids who really grew up watching you because they've appreciated the maturity that you've shown. You know, it's not easy to be living in a fishbowl under a microscope the way you did, and to be so graceful about it and so gracious. And I just have to tell you that I think your audience is just going to keep growing and growing and growing. And I think your songwriting is going to reflect the very unusual journey you've had because it has been anything but typical, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for all of that. That really does warm my heart. And
Well, it's not often that you're interviewed by a fan, as I told you before we started, but you know, and in my introduction to this interview, Jackie, I mentioned the critics, most of whom have been blown away by your amazing voice. But I was struck by something that Marilyn Lester wrote a few years ago in reviewing your show at 54 Below. She said, and I'm quoting her here, "The purity and perfection of Jackie Evancho's voice deserves to be carefully managed, as does the person behind that miraculous artistry." So, Jackie, let me ask you, do you agree that you and your voice need to be carefully managed? Or do you think you're doing a pretty good job of managing yourself when it comes to performing?
I think that I'm the expert at managing myself when I'm performing. I think the real thing is managing and upkeeping personal, mental health and physical health. I think that's the key. And that's a challenge I think everybody goes through in the industry. And it is a tricky, tricky balance, but I'm grateful because I never had the craving to experiment with drugs or, go off the handles. And, my coping mechanisms, they're not always healthy, but they were not the same as a lot of other people's. So I got lucky there.
Yeah, I think you managed to avoid two major pitfalls. One was substance abuse, and one was falling in love with your own stardom, believing all the hype, and losing your likability. I'm trying to find a nice way to say it. And you avoided those two major pitfalls, which of course is the reason why your adult fans, who are mature enough to understand that that wasn't easy, really love you. I know that in 2012, you appeared in a feature film starring Robert Redford called The Company You Keep. Would you like to do more acting in movies and on TV?
Oh, absolutely. I would love it. Through the years, I remember being really shy when I filmed that because, one, I was never an actress, and two, I was such a perfectionist, and it was such a foreign field for me that I was like floundering. I didn't know what to do, and I couldn't relax enough. Robert Redford was amazing because he managed to get me to relax and feel comfortable. But as I've gotten older, I'm a lot better at, embracing a character and letting go of myself to play the character.
You know, Barbara Streisand, who is also a world-renowned perfectionist, has said in recent years that she's learned to embrace the imperfections and not to be so hard on herself. Are you getting there too?
Absolutely. I think I'm still very hard on myself in many, many ways. For me, I think the trick is that I know how to manage the imperfections, and I know what to do if I encounter an imperfection and get it to a point where I'm pleased. And I'll know it's not perfect, but as long as I'm happy with it, I'm fine.
Well, Jackie, no interview with you would be complete, at least not an interview with me, unless I take a moment to acknowledge and recognize that you've done a lot of work and performed many times for charities to promote important social causes, including animal welfare, cancer research, organ transplants, UNICEF, the fight against Parkinson's disease, domestic violence, the campaign to supply hearing aids to people in need, LGBTQ rights. You performed in Hiroshima, Japan at the Peace for World concert. You performed for the One Drop Foundation in support of their mission to provide worldwide access to clean water. You've supported the teaching of music and art in public schools. And Jackie, I'm just touching the surface. That's just a few of the things you've done for charity. And I just want to thank you publicly for your volunteerism, for your activism to help make the world a better place. Thank you for everything you do, Jackie.
Of course, you don't have to thank me. I feel like it's my duty as a human to try to help. That's why I'm a musician too. I want people to feel like they are not alone and I hear them, and I hope that I can, soothe some of their pains, whether it's physical or mental. And, I'm a big lover of love, basically. I know that sounds cliche, but, I feel like we do need more of it. And if I can help in any way, whether it's donating, performing, going to shelters and actually doing the actual hands-on stuff, I want to do what I can.
Well, that's being a huge role model, not just a humanitarian. And there isn't enough of that in this industry. And I do believe I need to thank you. And of course, very close to your heart is the work you've done on behalf of the transgender community, inspired by your dear sister, Juliet. In 2017, you starred in a TV special called Growing Up Ivanko, focusing on your family life and the family's advocacy for transgender rights. How is Juliet doing?
She's doing wonderful. She lives in her own place now, and she's in a very happy relationship. And, she's thriving. She's really just living the life I think she always hoped to live. And yes, she's a little less in the public eye, but I think it's doing her some good. And she's just growing into the woman she's always wanted to be. And that makes me more than happy for her.
Please give her my love.
I will.
Now, Jackie, as you know, in 2016, you faced enormous public pressure from both political parties when you agreed to sing the national anthem at the inauguration of President Donald Trump. A few years ago, I heard you say in an interview that the lesson you learned from that experience is to always trust your gut and never allow yourself to be pressured, not even by your management team. What did you mean by that?
I knew that it would be something tricky because, see, I knew his reputation, but I also knew what I was always hoping to be able to do, which is sing at an inauguration. And I didn't know if I was ever going to have that chance again. But, you know, I was still very shaky. And it was my management team who was like, who cares? Just do it. It's an amazing opportunity. And though it is, I was terrified. And there was a lot of backlash that I got. So, of course, I'm kind of like, dang, you know, maybe my intuition was right to be a little nervous about it. But either way, I don't regret it for this sole reason that I got to perform not for that president, but for my country. And I got to cross something off my bucket list. And I get to be a name in history that's, you know, under inaugural performers. So, you know, that's all.
Well, I just wanted to give you a big hug because that was the first time I've seen you perform where I could sense that you were stressed. I mean, you sang the national anthem beautifully. Nobody can criticize that, but I could feel you were stressed because the whole event was very stressful. And I just wish I could have given you a hug.
Thank you. Would have been nice. Honestly, I was also very sick. Very sick. That morning, I was in bed for as long as I could be in bed. And maybe that was because of the stress that I got sick to begin with. But yeah, it was rough.
Now, a few years ago, you were brave enough to disclose to the world that you had been dealing with a number of very difficult mental health challenges having to do with body dysmorphia, eating disorder. You also had to deal with your parents' divorce. How are you doing now, Jackie? How are you feeling?
It's still a journey with that stuff. I think I'm in a stable place. My eating issues, I'm still battling and trying to find the perfect combination of therapeutic techniques and, you know, meal plans and everything to sort of be able to cope better with it. You know, I'm balancing everything as best as I can, and as happy and excited as I am to be embarking on this new journey and putting my stories out into the world, the other half of me is still very much struggling with what I struggle with. But I think it's important to admit that. That's the first step, you know? I'm not afraid to say I'm struggling. Of course, I'm going to struggle. I grew up in the industry, you know? And yeah, I didn't have a public freak out, but you know, it's kind of like impossible to go through this whole thing and not have a normal childhood and to be faced with these adult scenarios when you're a child and be put in dangerous positions and, you know, all of that stuff and not have some form of aftermath.
Absolutely. I hope you know, Jackie, how much love there is around you from your millions of fans all over the world, how much joy your music has brought to all of us. Do you allow yourself to absorb all of that love and really let it sink in?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is, people always tell me, you have the voice of an angel, or, you know, you sounded so beautiful. And then they'll follow it with, I know you get that all the time. But what they don't realize is, no matter how many times I hear it, it's about the connection I'm having with that person telling me. So it's new every time, and it's special every time. And it really does hit home for me, you know? It's a huge motivator for me.
Now, you know that the world of being a child star, where you were really very unique, there was really no one else doing what you did, is very different than the world of being a pop star, where there's a whole lot more competition because the playing field is full of singer-songwriters. Are you adjusting to that?
Yeah, I think so. I think honestly, I know that there's a lot of competition out there, but I also know what I myself want to say and also what I'm capable of. And I have a leg up here because, not to say everybody else is extremely talented or, you know, has multitude of different parts of their voice they can use, but, you know, I have this classical background and I also have this whole new pop side. And for me, it's really cool to sort of mesh the two and just experiment with it. But ultimately, it's not about being the top performer for me. It's more just doing what feels right.
Well, I think you're doing it really, really well. I really do think you are very unique because there's a surprising level of emotional intensity and sometimes even pain in the emotions you express when you perform. And that opens our eyes and it opens our ears and it opens our hearts to who you really are. You know, when you were a kid, you sang these classic songs that had been sung a million times by all the greatest singers, but they weren't you. Now we're hearing you, and I hope you never lose sight of the fact that you're now sharing your heart, your soul, your dreams, your disappointments with your audience through your music. I hope that you find it therapeutic to know that we're with you. We love you.
Thank you. It is actually, it's interesting because that's basically one of the main reasons why I wanted to, put my songs out there and really embrace songwriting. I struggle to verbally talk about the things that pain me, that I've been through or witnessed or, all of that. But something I was able to do is speak through music. And until and even after I'm able to, have a conversation about it, it's always going to be music that gives me the courage and the strength to really put it out there. And it means the world to me that people see me and they see who I really am. And, they're not looking at me as this girl who's like, what are you crying about? You've had such a perfect life. They're actually hearing what I have to say, and they're hearing the truth that was written into these words, and it just keeps me eager to keep going.
So, if you could go back and talk to that 10-year-old Jackie Evancho who was standing at the finale at America's Got Talent, what would you say to her?
I guess I would say, don't be afraid and brace yourself because it's going to be a long, crazy ride. Yeah, I never really realized after that. I'm going home and I'm like, that was a fun experience. Never realized my whole world was going to change.
Well, you changed your world, you changed ours, you changed history. It's been such a pleasure meeting you, Jackie. I know how incredibly busy you are. I really appreciate you taking the time to appear on our show. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was lovely to meet you.
Our guest has been music superstar Jackie Evancho, whose latest EP entitled Sola is now available on all major music streaming platforms. To learn more about Jackie, her concert schedule, and everything that's happening, please go to her official website, jackieevancho.com. My name is Harvey Brownstone. Thank you all for joining us. See you next time. Thank you to my producer, Steve Silver, my managers, Rick Marcelli and Robin Bragg Marcelli at the Marcelli Company in Hollywood, my director of programming, Robert Monaghan, my PR directors, Eileen Shapiro and Jimmy Starr, and my entire team at the XPTV One Network in the UK.
Thanks for watching. Be sure to check out all the great interviews on the Harvey Brownstone Interviews YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and ring the bell to be notified when new videos are posted.